Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Matt B. Davis, filling in for Amy Otto, who's in Thailand. Maybe. We've got a very exciting show today. I'm very excited. We've got sort of a hodgepodge of guests, and I think it's going to be educational for anyone who's in small business or thinking of starting a small business. I'm really excited to have everybody here. I'm actually going to have them introduce themselves, and then we'll kind of dig right into it. So we'll start with the man on my left.
Hey, I'm Ben Washer. I run a label called Reach Records. It's an independent hip-hop label here in Atlanta.
I'm John Cullum, founder of Northcraft Analytics. It's a small software company in Atlanta.
Richard Carswell. I'm a financial center leader and loan officer with BB&T.
So cool. So I'm going to start with you, Richard. Really excited to have Richard here. He's going to talk a lot about small business and how they can, I'm going to have you sort of talk about that. So tell, if I'm a small business owner, what is it that I mostly need to know or do when it comes to my banking relationship or choosing my banking relationship?
It's a great question, Matt. At BB&T, I mean, it's really important for us to partner with our business clients. And so I think one of the things that a small business, best thing that they can do is have great people around them that support them, whether it be a mentor, whether it be a CPA. And I think a good banker to partner with is an excellent thing for a small business to make sure that they have a good bank to partner with and someone to build that relationship with.
And what I know that your bank is not one of the big five or two or one or however many big banks that are left. What is the difference and why does someone choose a BB&T?
It's a great question. We are one of the largest financial institutions, but we're structured a little bit differently than most of our competitors. BB&T has 1,800 financial centers across 12 states and Washington, D.C. However, we are structured as a community-based bank, and one of the things that really differentiates BB&T is our vision, mission, and our values. And one of the things that I think that is important to BB&T is to make sure that we build that relationship with our clients and that we help our clients achieve economic success and financial security. And that's a big part of our mission is at BB&T is to help our clients achieve that success. And so we want to make sure that we partner with them and provide the financial solutions that they need in order to achieve that success.
Okay, great. How has that been for you, Ben, when you've started your company? How important is your banking relationship been, or have you been with different banks, or how has that been for you?
Well, it's funny. I'm actually with BB&T now. I just switched about a year ago, and I love it, and I love their model and how they operate. But we were with a few other banks, and it was okay. It was kind of impersonal. I didn't really know what I was doing when I started the company. And I don't know, being able to go into BB&T and have a more personal relationship has been amazing. They've helped work with us on our business credit and all kinds of stuff. But for us, a bank was just kind of a place to put money, and we didn't really know what was available to us when we started. So I think for me, what I'm looking for is someone to actually help me, give me feedback, help guide me through the growth of my company, and we found that with BB&T so far.
And I didn't even know that before we started this interview, so that plug for you, Richard. And how about you, John? How has it been for you and your...
Yeah, similarly, we are, we've been growing just basically out of our own revenues, so we haven't been borrowing a whole lot. I'm actually very interested to kind of hear advice on lending. There are a lot of things that we could do to grow, mostly in the marketing area, but we're... right now, we've been growing organically. Really, I've been using banking more just for deposits and flow through, that kind of thing. I'm with Bank of America. I'm not exactly thrilled about it. So, hey, man, I'm open.
Yeah.
And so he said, you know, hey, we haven't really needed loans. What else do you provide besides just loans? If someone says, hey, I'm not ready to do that, or we're fine with cash, or we're not fine with cash, but we don't think we have the credit, how else do you help small and medium-sized businesses?
That's a great question. So a lot of clients, you know, one of the things that they may not have a need for a loan immediately, or it may grow organically and grow through their cash flow. But one of the things that we can do is really help them with other solutions that may either help them streamline their business or may help them save money. So one of the things that BB&T is very good at is that we're the sixth largest insurance broker in the world and in the United States. So we can help our clients protect the things that they value, whether that be their personal assets or whether that be their business assets. And, you know, we have lots of different tools at BB&T, whether it be from payroll, helping you with your payroll services, making sure that you pay your employees on time and you stay compliant with tax regulations and laws, or whether it be, you know, just making sure that your cash management, you have a good cash management system in place, and other things that we can help our clients with, merchant services, accepting payments from your clients and giving you different tools to accept and different ways to accept payments from your clients. So that really helps from a cash management standpoint. So even if you don't have a need for a loan, a specific need for a loan, we can help, and we have tools to help our clients in other ways.
Cool. So John, tell us, what is it exactly Northcraft Analytics? What do you do?
Right. Well, we provide sort of the management reporting that the IT shop and Fortune 1000 companies would use. So it a lot of the time, IT shops provide those kind of things to the operational departments, say, you know, how much money do our individual products make? But very seldom is any of that stuff pointed at the IT department itself. We've sort of found a niche there to provide that kind of management reporting to the IT shop itself. Help that department run itself better. That's essentially what we do. We provide software that reports off of that.
And how did you wind up doing this for a living?
So I provided a similar kind of function for airlines previously. So systems that say, hey, your flights make, that flight to Denver made $1,000, those sort of systems. And from there, I've sort of looked for different industries to provide that same kind of function. Airlines being what they are, not the most stable place to try to make your career. But the IT function, it's in every Fortune 1000 company, so it's actually turned out to be a pretty good market for us.
So your target market is IT companies of any big company?
It's pick a large company like, for instance,
Home Depot.
Home Depot, right. Perfectly good one. They have an IT shop of, say, 250 people, and they do various things, like they respond to people using their laptop, say, hey, my laptop is broken. Or on a larger kind of scale, say, hey, our inventory system is down for an hour. People are going nuts. What you want to know about that department is, are they responding quickly? Are they solving the problems quickly? And unless you have some kind of coherent system of management reporting, you don't really know if the IT shop is doing its job or not. We basically provide, you know, frameworks, reports, all of those things that management needs to say is this function doing what it's supposed to do? Basically, we can, you know, get even a large company up and running in about a week to give them the kind of information they need. And people have been pretty excited about that.
And so as far as the company goes, you started the company because why? You had seen your is it because you'd seen that you did this for other companies and you thought, why shouldn't I make this? Did you think you could build a better mousetrap? Why did you started the company, correct?
Sure.
Okay,
yes.
So why did you start the company?
So, okay. So most people starting their own business have similar kind of story to this. I was doing sort of specifically this kind of thing for the airlines. I was working with increasingly smaller and smaller organizations, and I found out that, you know, eventually I was in a situation where I was doing all of the functions, including, you know, developing the software, selling it, you know, doing the consulting about it for somebody else. And I said, well, why don't I just do this myself? So I did. I walked away from a company and decided to do this for airlines to no spectacular success. You know, a lot of that is airlines were going through horrible problems. The people that I had relationships were not, you know, in the position to be buying software at the moment. So I started to look for different markets. I worked with somebody in IT, my brother, in fact, and he said, hey, this stuff would be great for IT departments. And he actually had connections to sell it as well. So that's really the core of that business. You know, we have all of the pieces. We got the product. We got the distribution. We could probably use a little better marketing, maybe a little capital, that kind of thing. But we found a first client very quickly, and then we've been able to just pile on better and better clients, and it's kind of grown, and I can see where it's going. But that's sort of how we got there. You know, you try something, it doesn't work. You turn to the left, and then you find something that does. I mean,
right. Okay, I want to get back to you on some of that stuff, but I want to get sort of the background on you, Ben, and how you came to be a record label guy. So tell us how you sort of wound up there.
Well, it was definitely by accident. I wasn't aspiring to be in the music industry. A friend of mine from college and I had some, my roommate's little brother played guitar and sang with one of his friends, and we loved what he was doing. So we said, at a joke at a wedding, we said, let's start a record label. And we shook on it, kind of like, ha, ha, ha. And then a few months later, neither of us could sleep. We were thinking about it so much. So we said, well, let's think about it for a week. And then a week later, we registered the company and went for it. And it ended up falling off with those guys, and I knew another guy that was doing hip-hop. And so really the start of who we were was hip-hop, and then just continued down that path. So now, 8 years later, we're a hip-hop label.
And it's a faith-based hip-hop label?
Yeah, faith-based hip-hop. So it's all from a biblical perspective, but it's still, we like to say, authentically hip-hop, authentically Christian.
As opposed to phony hip-hop, phony Christian.
Well, you know, sometimes when Christians do art, it can be on the cheese side, so.
I've never heard that before.
So we like to try and be, connected to where culture is.
Right. So you sort of described yourself as an accidental entrepreneur.
Definitely.
And John, would you say you're sort of similarly, you didn't really set out to do that, like when you graduated college or?
Oh, yeah, certainly not.
You have a couple degrees, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I've got an MBA from Cornell. I was going just a very straightforward path, straight through into finance, graduated into a recession and, scrambled a little bit, went to a sort of smaller organization and that's had enough with it. I'll do it myself.
Awesome. So when it comes to other people doing that, because there might be other people out there with similar stories, either through the academic route or not, what do you think the most important thing to know is, just sort of, starting out, I've got an idea, I don't know if I can quit my job. I would open this up to anybody. What you think sort of is the most important thing just to get started, just to open the doors and turn the lights on?
I think that kind of is the most important thing, is just to get started. I think most people like to sit around and dream and talk, and that's the easy part, but the hard part is kind of putting your hands to the plow and dealing with all the crap that comes with that. So that's the first thing is do something, whatever that is, take that first step.
Yeah, I think it's a lot also know yourself. There are a lot easier ways to make money than starting out on your own. If you really don't like working for somebody else, then that can be a driving decision. But it's the mistakes you make, the dumb things that you do are your own. Yeah. You can blame yourself. If you feel a greater level of satisfaction with that, then...
Well, it's funny how amazing it looks on paper before you start and how perfectly it's all going to play out.
Right.
And then... when reality hits.
When you say that, you mean like, oh, I'm going to make this thing, I'm going to sell it for X? And
yeah, before we started Reach Records, we went, and I remember we took a weekend and got away and like did a pro forma. We didn't know what we were doing, but we just said, all right, stuff's going to cost this much, and this is what we're going to sell this year and next year. We did like a five-year plan. That was a total waste of time. I mean,
all right,
we didn't know what we were doing. So.
Because you couldn't accurately project sales?
Well, I didn't have any experience in the industry. And it was my first time running a business, so I guess all that combined meant, what are you doing? You really don't know what's going to come with all this,
Right.
So I'm projecting expenses in year three. Well, what do I know about that?
Right. Well, it's interesting, John. You sort of figure this out and you turn left or whatever, however you describe it. So my next question would be sort of about that is for people that are, I would say – in their, let's say their second or third year of business, and they've sort of like gotten over that initial excitement of, hey, I don't have to clock in on somebody's clock. I've got this thing going. I'm starting to make some money. There's definitely some pitfalls that happen probably shortly after that. And I'd like to know what you would say to folks sort of in that realm, or what they should look for, maybe some mistakes you made that they could learn from before they fall into that pit.
Yeah,
or does everyone have to fall in those pits and that's how you learn?
I mean, I honestly think that the mistakes are the things that get you through it. I mean, if there is no kind of golden ticket lying on the ground, you see this opportunity, you're going to be able to pick it up and be wealthy. That's just not going to happen. Kind of the best situation you can be in is, say, I have something that I know that people do value. People, I see people out there buying this kind of thing from an organization like the one I can create. That's about the best feel for the market that you're going to get. I mean, it's until you're in it, it's very difficult to completely replicate that situation. Yeah, I mean, I think once you're starting to have some traction and you're selling something, to understand what it is that people buy, why it's being successful, and then to look for metaphors and analogies in different kind of situations, right? Like somebody is buying this type of music, and in this demographic, what's a similar kind of thing in another demographic that's, you know, there is some kind of lack, you know, that usually when you, the word entrepreneur is to fill a gap, right? That's
I didn't know that.
Neither did I.
The French are all like that, right? Who knows what other meanings that may have. But it really is about, there is all over the market, there are all these kinds of lacks that the closer you get and the deeper you get into the market, you find out that they're there. And it's once you've been in there, you know, having some success and a lot of failure, it becomes very stark to say, okay, this is a place where I will never have any success. And that saves you so much time. And to say, this is a potential thing where I might actually have some little bit of success. It is worth my time and effort to take away from other successful things that I'm doing to test this out. And that's essentially it, I think.
Do you have anything to add, Ben?
No. Sorry.
Well, I think what you're speaking to is, you know, looking for a niche market and finding that niche market for your business. And that's really what I think makes a lot of small businesses successful, is recognizing where that niche is in the market and then, like you said, filling that void and fulfilling that need for the client.
When you started your company, did you see yourself as the I'm the creative guy, or I'm going to be the money guy? Or did you think, well, like, how did you find your strengths? How did you try to find and build your company around those strengths, that kind of thing? I would like to talk to you, Ben, first about that one.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm just naturally like more idea, creative, strategy. That's where I lean, and that's what excites me. But I thought I could be great at everything. So I spent the first few years of the company thinking that I could do the accounting, I could do the strategy, I could do the marketing, I could do, you know, I even designed some stuff. I mean, I was trying to do it all, not because I thought I was awesome, but just, you know, I thought it was all possible for me to do. And it took some years for me to finally be honest with myself and go, okay, I'm really good at some things and I'm really terrible at some things. So I need to find some people to help that are better at what I'm terrible at. And that's such a basic concept, but I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't get that. They just have this idea and they're running with it, and then it all starts to fall apart because I think a lot of starters aren't organized types of people. So,
do you have anything to add to that, John? Was that your experience as well?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Just the constraint on time, you just find out that you just don't have enough time to do everything. And if you can partner with somebody or, you know, even other organizations that can take some of the load off of you, that's great. I mean, I will also say be careful when partnering, because you'll want to partner with people who are like you and that you get along with. Bad call, because you already do that stuff.
Right.
You have that personality type covered. The people that you hate are very likely to cover the things that you're not doing.
Yeah, I would actually speak to that personally. Yeah. When I was finding, you know, sort of my first employees, sort of my first assistants, I kept thinking I wanted to find these young guys that were like me, that I could mold sort of to be more like me, and we're going to, you know, grow this big company.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, disastrous. I think, you know, I fired and hired like 20 people in, you know, less than 10 months. And that's just, you know, the thing I learned is that there was one common denominator with those 20 people, and that was me. So there was also a bunch of things I had to learn, you know, to your point about not being the best at everything. Is not only am I not the best at everything, but if I don't get out of the way, I'm doing more damage,
right,
by being in the way of those things.
Yeah. And what you don't like tends to be unimportant to you. And so your employees will be really frustrated because you're not paying attention to it. So I had this employee early on that was always like, we need systems, we need this you know, we these operations things, and I'm like, ah, you know,
systems,
we're creating, we're doing marketing, we're, you know, designing, and so it took a while for me to finally go, and she was right, you know.
Is she still with your company or not?
No, she left out of frustration.
Do you send her nice cards once in a while?
Well, we're friends now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So actually, that's perfect. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about systems. That's, you know, every business book ever pretty much out there says, got to get systems. All right, so how do I do that? Do I have to buy programs? Do they exist? Do I have to design programs? Like, what do you think their keys are around that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you do. But, I mean, one of the things you need to get in place pretty quickly is probably your accounting. I mean, that's QuickBooks, I think, is delightful. Mm-hmm. Well, let's not go that far, but it is certainly usable and will keep you out of jail.
I would say delightful.
Delightful,
all
yeah.
Right, all right. I do think that there is a step more to the point is like getting started, figuring out what that product is, just making a thing. That's before process and systems.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start to have success and start to grow, you need to get some process and systems and regular ways to make decisions such that not everything is, you know, all the founders shouting at each other and, you know, huge conflict. But it's those things evolve. I feel like I had experience in large companies, and I sort of knew some of those. You know, I've seen how some of those things work. I wouldn't say that all of those things would apply to a small company, but I at least know that there, you know, there is a marketing department, there is an accounting department, you know, and there is a hiring process, things like that. So it's they're appropriate when you get to the right size.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hardest thing to do. I mean, a lot of large organizations are still terrible with process and systems. So
yeah, I think in being able to identify the right type of person. So if you're looking for somebody, your tendency is to look for somebody that you like having coffee with, like you said. But you got to look for somebody that maybe would be boring to have coffee with, you know? So
because they're really good at the thing that you're not good at.
Right. And so their brain works differently than you. They're interested in different things than you. And structure, they love it. They love when Excel is matching up and all the numbers are working. And God bless them because I can't do that. So
right.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that. If I'm a new business owner, how do I hire somebody? Like, how do I find out rules and laws? Do I need to hire an HR person? Do I have to hire lawyers? How do I even go about that? It might seem completely overwhelming.
I still shoot from the hip on hiring. No, we've got like a personality skills test that we use that's been helpful for identifying how people are wired. And then we've got a outside company called Caliper that we use for like our finalist in an application. But it's definitely just getting to know them and making sure that they have experience or they have a skill level in what you need and being able to identify exactly what that need is. A lot of times you just have a hunch that you need something, but maybe you don't. So being able to define it and write it down and slide it across the table so they know exactly what they're getting into is very helpful.
And then so should I, if I'm starting a business, should I be worried about this process about hiring? Should I worry about getting sued, or like I said, do I absolutely have to look into all kinds of legal ramifications, or are you saying like it's okay to just kind of shoot from the hip? And
probably not okay. I mean, we have a little bit, like we have a kind of a agreement that we've typed up that's an employee agreement, but we haven't hired lawyers or have a really strict process for all that. We're still trying to figure that out.
And how about you?
This may or may not be the best way to go about it, but I will throw this out here as a decent model, actually. I think the legal stuff can be very important. And then the question is like, well, I'm not going to pay $400 an hour to get this legal advice. So let me tell you something about lawyers. They don't want to be lawyers, right? They want to have a chance to start something, get big, get rich in a shot and all that kind of stuff. So what you can do with a lawyer is make them a partner in your firm, give them ownership. You can get some of the things that you need out of them, and their, you know, their attention in their spare time as they work for a legal firm. I got very lucky in that one of my friends from college is this brilliant lawyer, and he probably would have done it just out of the kindness of his heart. But Hopefully we'll make them a lot of money doing it.
When you say make him a partner, how much of your company did you have to give up to have unlimited access to his lawyer brain?
I gave 5%. Maybe that's on the light side, to be honest.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Don't let him listen to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. but, I mean, he has been absolutely critical to us, you know, getting through what we have to do. We tackle legal departments of giant companies, and they are brutal. But we have a better lawyer. So, I mean, he's able to get us through all that kind of stuff. But I would think about offering some equity for a lawyer. It's a good system, and... They devote their time early when you don't have the money to pay them, and they may be rewarded on the back end when they do a lot less work for the amount of money that comes in. Well, great. You know, mm-hmm. they're buying a lottery ticket. They didn't know you would be successful. So.
Now, one thing I've that I've had a hard time with, you know, talking about exactly what you're talking about, let's call it free help or bartered help, is that it's all good and well, except for sometimes then deadlines are created or not met. And there can be some vagueness there about, well, hey, like if I'm paying to get this website done by this date, I can stomp loud when it's not done. But if you're my buddy and you're doing it and he's like, listen, I'm doing you a favor. So have you had any of that with this lawyer thing or other stuff?
I have not with the lawyer, but I have had that. I have had those problems before. So it's difficult to for the most part, when you partner with somebody, you should make sure you're all on the same footing, right? So if you're if somebody has a similar equity share, you guys should all have been, you know, you've all quit your jobs. You're all, you know, staring death in the face. And you get this done. Why you get this done? Because we need the money. I'm going to starve to death. Right. That works when you've got similar equity stakes and, yeah, well, you know, whatever. It's good enough here at Chuck E. Cheese. You know, I'm gonna make rent. Then it just – the wheels fall off. So be careful with bartered help and all those kind of things. It can still go bad. And when you're giving equity, you just kind of got to know who you're getting in bed with. In the end, we really all operate on we just want more spare time or we want more money. There really isn't anything else. So people will get lazy on you.
Right. Yeah, I've definitely found it's one of those things where, you know, there's that old saying, it's like, I can do it for nothing, or I can do it for the rate that I charge everybody. I can't give you my, you know, friends and family rate, because everybody I do business with is somebody I'm eventually friends with. So I treat my vendors the same way. Listen, I know your time's valuable, so obviously I want the cheapest thing, but I like to set up, okay, one of two ways. Either we're going to do it for nothing, and you'll get it done when you get it done, or I want to pay you something because I want... Even though I like you, I won't be able to kick your butt if it's not done on time or the way I want it.
And one alternative may be that, you know, rather than giving a stake in your company, you know, you may be surprised. BB&T has a partnership with ADP, and there's payroll companies out there that can really help you with, you know, establishing an employee handbook, making sure you're compliant with tax laws and regulations. ADP does a great job with that, whether you're one employee or whether you're 10,000 employees. And so they can help you as you continue to grow with those laws and regulations, with the labor law poster, with the things to help make you compliant, that and for a relatively inexpensive cost to make sure you're compliant. Because if you were to have, you know, an unemployment claim, it can be costly for your organization, cause your unemployment rates to go up. So it is important to make sure that those things are taken into account when starting a business, whether you're brand new or whether you've been in business for 5 years. You want to make sure you have those partners that you can use as a resource.
Yeah, I actually think that's a really great point, is that there are resources out there. You know, you talked about QuickBooks, and when I was starting and I had all these questions, I just Googled it, and there's these people called QuickBooks experts. So you can look online and find them and call them up, and that's how I found a couple of our who ended up being bookkeepers, because they answered really hard questions, and you end up learning a lot that way because the help is out there. It's just a matter of, you know, sort of finding it.
I will, to your point as well, I will say Google is the best resource for anybody trying to start anything. I mean, the answer to everything is out there.
And has probably been asked. If you start typing it, you go, oh, somebody else asked that question.
Yep. Exactly. I mean, I would definitely say I Googled my way into a technical career. I mean, Gen Y loves posting about their entire life. So if they've answered a question, it's on the internet.
I once heard you say, Ben, that it always takes longer, costs more, and seems harder than you initially thought with any business. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to my comment of how you map out what it's going to look like, and then you actually start dealing with the reality of it. And I found that almost with every project, every new company, or whatever, every new initiative you think is going to be like X and we'll get done at this time on this day. I mean, just last night I was finishing a project and I told my wife, yeah, we'll probably be done after lunch. Well, after lunch comes, hey, it's looking more like six. Six comes, hey, it's probably going to be a little later, you know, and I feel like that's just a continual story. It's really hard to estimate what it's going to take to do something excellent. And so just for us, it's always cost more. It's always been harder than you thought, you know. You just think, hey, well, look, let's shoot a music video by Friday. Well, then what does that entail? Well, we need a set. We need people. We need, you know, staff. We need all that lined up. And so it's easy to think of it, and then
dancers,
right?
How does that work in the faith-based hip hop world? Is there a different sort of dancer you're looking for? Or?
Well, you can dance. There's just certain moves you kind of steer clear of.
Okay,
yeah,
not in Kansas.
that's actually a great segue into something I wanted to talk about, which is sort of life work balance, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm a business owner and I'm, you know, I've got to spend X amount of hours. Well, put it to you this way: there's no clock, so the day could just go on forever. Has that been difficult for you? Do you have a family?
Yes, I have two kids and one on the way.
All right, and how about? Whoa, that's a lot. How about you
and wife?
Yes, I also have two children. Is it a problem? Sure.
Okay.
Again, there are easier ways to make money. There are easier ways to have an easy life than starting your own business. I would say especially in the beginning, but I don't really know exactly when that ends. When you land, you know, a big client, how are you going to walk away? I mean, how mm-hmm. are you going to box your time and, risk failure for something that's important with one of those things and other people are depending on you?
Right. So that's my question is how have you found that to be? Have you been able to balance your work and your family, or has that been, how's that gone?
I would say the balance comes more from the fact that, the schedule of our kind of projects is we're on a project, we're off a project, and you kind of find the balance in between. I have sort of a lumpy schedule. So I try to make up, you know, in the spare time what I've missed when we were in the trenches.
Yeah. I think it's different for each family, and you got to connect with your family to know what works. For me, it's a predictable discipline. 5 o'clock, yesterday was an exception, but it's usually 5 o'clock, boom, I'm walking out the door, no matter what's going on. And then I might start it back up at 8:30 or 9. But I have some time with the wife and kids and all that, and they go to bed, and, you know, I've protected that time. And in the morning, I make sure I eat breakfast with them, and then I go out, so...
Okay. You're a new dad, I hear.
Brand new dad, 3-week-old.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How's that gone for you and your sort of work-life balance?
Well, I mean, I think it's always challenging to balance work and life, whether you're a small business owner or whether you have a career in corporate America. I think you always have to make sure that you put things in place, you know, whether it's making sure that you're always home for dinner or making sure that you have breakfast with your family each morning. But I think it's important to spend that quality time, you know, each and every day, regardless of, you know, how busy life can get. You can pick it up at 9 o'clock, or you can, you know, maybe try and find ways to be better at your time management throughout the day. And I think that that's regardless of whether you're in a business, a small business, or whether you're in a corporate America and working for a company.
Have you, any of you, this is open to anyone, again, for new business owners, is there anything that you've read or seen or watched that definitely helped you? There's so much out there, you know, in that world, in the self-help or the business world. Are there anything that you would say like, oh, this is something that I would absolutely recommend or absolutely stay away from?
I haven't read it. I've skimmed it, but I've heard a lot about it. So I feel like I've read it. There's a book called E-Myth.
Right.
And I feel like that tackles a lot of what we were talking about of, you're good at something, someone else is good at another thing, or you're growing and here's the seasons you're going to go through. I think that book addresses a lot of it and gives you some practical help. But I found that whoever's read it, it's been one of their top, and definitely the themes of it resonate with me.
How about you?
Two that I like for software businesses, and it probably works for it's a decent kind of marketing strategy kind of book. There's a series of them, but it starts with a Crossing the Chasm and Building the Tornado. Those are they're really interesting about how to once you have a product or some successful thing, getting it started and getting into sales, and then growing beyond that, how to look to the next market. I find those both very helpful.
And is there anything you've read that's not so specific?
Those are sort of legion. I try to stay away from kind of management books. I don't know if that's really the message everybody wants to hear. I like books that are in the discipline itself. So if I'm thinking about marketing, I like to read a marketing-specific book. Or if I'm thinking about finance, I sort of like the academic bent. That's my nature.
Yeah, you're allowed to have your own opinion. It's totally okay. Some people are, you know, I'm someone that likes to read a lot of those kind of books, and because there's usually something in there that's new or something that gets reiterated that I didn't hear. But I totally hear what you're saying. We've had another guest here, Steve French, who's a web guy, who's one of the few people I know who he'll read a book that tells you how to do something and then know how to do it. Like, you'd think no one can learn how to play guitar through a book, but he's the kind of person that would read the book and then know how to play the guitar. But anyway, so I totally get what you're saying about making sure that it's, you know, specific and measurable. How about you?
One of the books that comes to mind for me is Good to Great. I think it's a fantastic book, and I think that it applies. You really can use those principles from the book, no matter what business you're in. And I think that really applies to a lot of different businesses, and anybody can apply that to their business.
Right. Yeah, I actually just am finishing that one. Did you read the other one, The Built to Last?
I haven't read Built to Last.
I have not read that one either. Let's talk about sort of what you're up to lately. We're sort of gonna wrap up here. I know that you guys had a Grammy nomination this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been a great year for us. It's been our biggest year ever as a business. So it's been a little nuts, a lot of growing pains, but. Yeah, we had a Grammy nomination back in February, and we're just releasing an album basically every 2.5 months this year. So it's been crazy.
Is that like reasonable? Is that what other labels do, or are you're just going for it?
That's just our size. I mean, there's labels that release, you know, 10 a month. So it just depends on your size and what you're capable of. But
do you have a certain we're gonna gain this, like movies say, we're gonna make 12 movies this year, who's gonna make the cut? Is that how you guys look at it, or you just are always looking for new content?
Well, we like to keep it small, and it's we're really passionate about the potency of our product, and we're not just interested in kind of a Walmart approach. We really want it to be focused and each one be beautiful that we create. So for us, it's crafting each album, each branding experience, each marketing, so that it's a unique thing and we're not just churning out the albums.
So there's no goal per year on how many artists you're going to sign or how many records you're going to release?
No, we never. Maybe we should, but we don't really have numbers goals.
No, that's fine. I was just sort of getting the. And so what you're saying is it's definitely a quality over quantity type
situation. Yeah, I mean,
it's
definitely like, is this connecting with who we are as a company and what we want to do and our mission? And you know, we move forward like that. And there's no shortage of desire to do new things. So I think the issue is reining ourselves back a little.
How do you weed through 50 million creative, you know, artists out there who say, my music, you have to listen to, it's going to be great? How do you decide, okay.
You mean the huge 33-gallon trash can we have full of dynamos right now?
Exactly.
We usually prefer to have new artists. We have a relationship with them beforehand. We know who they are. We know what they're doing. It's not just kind of like, hey, heard your demo, you're hot, fly up here, you know, let's work it out. Because for us, it's important, like their character, who they are as a person has to match up with who we are. So it's a kind of a tight brand under our label. So we have to be a lot more selective than just, are you talented?
And so the last person that you signed, was it because you found it? Someone said you have to listen to this guy or girl or this group, or how did that happen?
It's somebody that had been on some of our songs before and was a friend, and we knew what he was up to up in New York City. He actually just signed 2 weeks ago. So for us, it was a process of getting to know him and, okay, we see you working it in New York City. Let's try and take that worldwide.
Okay. Yeah. So the website of your label, if people want to find you, or you're on iTunes or...
Yeah, reachrecords.com will take you everywhere you need to go.
Okay, fantastic. And you, what's up and next for Northcraft Analytics?
We're sort of growing in the South. We're just completing a project for Turner Broadcasting. We're working with Lockheed Martin with essentially the Australian IRS. So we're running. We're just trying to keep up with that and grow. We've got a big convention in D.C. in September, the Fusion 11 event for all UIT fans out there. We're sort of seeing the concept catch fire, and I'm just trying to get the word out.
And where can folks find?
You can find us at northcraftanalytics.com. rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Are you on Twitter?
I am not on Twitter.
I don't know why I found that so funny, but I did. And Richard, how can folks get in touch with you or your bank?
Absolutely. They can. I'm actually located in Sandy Springs on Roswell Road in the Marshall Shopping Center, but they can visit any one of our 1,800 financial centers throughout the 12 states in Washington, D.C. We have approximately 90 in Metro Atlanta, or visit bbnt.com.
Fantastic. So before we wrap up, I want to plug a couple things. Started something that we do on Fridays with some local business owners called Friday Breakfast. Ben's actually been there once, and you dug it, right?
I dug it, yeah. It was fun to connect with other guys that are entrepreneurs and hear their story and work through problems.
Yeah, so you can actually, we're on Twitter. You can actually go to FridayBreakfast.com if you want to find out where we're meeting, if you want to be a part of that. And then I'm actually bringing to town... a gentleman named Ben Estee teaches something called Essential Skills Training. I don't have a website for it yet, but it's going to be August 16th, which is a Saturday. It's a one-day, really cool training. It's not just for business owners. It's for your employees. It's for anybody. It really is essential skills for running a business and stuff you can apply for your life, and it's only $125 for a one-day thing. If you want more info on that, you can email me. That's matt@bmtpromo.com, which is a great plug for me to say about our business, which is bmtpromo.com. We staff promotions, trade shows, conventions nationwide. And with that, I want to thank my guests today again for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Ben, John, and Richard. And enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, man.